Hey y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Here on Liberty Radio Network. LibertyRadioNetwork.com, LRN.FM. ScottHorton.org is my website. Got 3,900 and something interviews there now. Going back to 2003. A lot of whole show archives too, although not going back to 2003. And I got a blog where I never blog. And I got a chat room where I do chat. The chat room is at scotthorton.org/chat. And I like it, man. You know, they're different people. They come and go over the years. It's not the exact same crew all this time. But there's always a nice little community of people in there, you know? Kind of, you know, internet friends. Chat room friends. Join up, man. scotthorton.org/chat. Morning, guys. Unless you live on the East Coast, in which case, happy lunchtime to you. All right. Today on the show, no guests. Everybody told me no. Hey, at least they answered back this time. They said to me things like, nope, can't do it. And, sorry, I'm going to be busy right during that time. How about tomorrow? Well, so here's the good news about that. Tomorrow, we'll have Gareth. The great Gareth Porter. And also Charlotte Silver. Who, yeah, she's writing about important things. And also our friend Ray McGovern. It'll be Gareth on Syria, Charlotte Silver on Israel-Palestine, and Ray on Ukraine and the MH17 and this and that. Got the new MH17 report came out. Let's see what Mr. CIA analyst says. Former. also on Monday, I swear, I mean to make a tradition out of this. I really want to do this thing. I've been looking for who's the right guy to do this, and I think that this is the right guy to do this. Jeremy Keegan, do you remember? That's not it. I'm confusing names. It's Keegan Stephan. That's it. He's got two first names. Keegan Stephan. And I think he's a lefty, but I don't care. He's an anti-police activist from New York. And anyway, what I want to do is I want to have it where every Monday, it really would be better if it was every Friday, right? But according to his schedule, it's got to be Mondays. But okay, fine. So every Monday, we're going to catch up on the last week of people killed by the cops for no good reason. And then the purpose of this, of course, is to, you know, give due to the innocent who deserve to be acknowledged, the innocent dead who deserve to be acknowledged. But also, I believe my hypothesis is that what will be demonstrated by doing this week after week is that we can never keep up. That Keegan Stephan, with his master list of people killed by the cops on this show every week, will never be able to get through them all. He'll never be able to get through them all. That's my bet. That's what I think is going to come of this. So that in a couple of years, you'll say, man, you know, on the Scott Horton Show, I've been listening to him interview this one guy every week about the police killings, and they can never cover them all. They try, but it just doesn't work. It can't happen. Now, maybe I'm wrong about that, but yeah, I don't think so. It's about two or three people killed per day. So, 7 days in a week, 15, 20 people. Can we do that in a half-hour interview? And they say most of those are armed, but that doesn't, to me, imply for a minute that they're trying to use whatever weapon they supposedly have against the cops. And that's assuming that they're even telling the truth that they're armed at all. But this is America, and free human beings have the right to be armed. That's not a death sentence. I mean, it's a de facto one a lot of the time, but it's not supposed to be. And I've said this before, but I think it's true and it bears repeating. You know, whereas it's possible for someone to kill a cop, it's very, very rare. And even sometimes hardened career criminals would never kill a cop. That's absolutely crazy. That's guaranteed death penalty. I mean, probably execution in the field, but if you survive that, you're getting the chair, man. And if it's organized crime, you're going to bring down the whole agency on the organization. So you don't cross that line, that kind of thing. But cops apparently are trained to believe that any American is trained to take their life at any moment. That's all we care about. You know, they're like Israelis, I guess. They wake up in the morning thinking, oh, everybody hates me and wants to kill me for who I am. And then they act out their aggression all day long. In fact, a lot of the cops train in Israel might be a big part of that. Yeah, we're all Palestinians now. But anyway, so that's what I want to do, man. I want to interview Keegan Stephan. Often. About the cops. You can follow him on Twitter. That was where I got the idea, because I'm following the guy on Twitter, and he's on top of things, man. He really is. Got them all there for you, so. So we plan on seeing. All right, look, as long as I started off the show on the police state issue, let me cover a couple more for you here. The hard truth about cops who lie. This is at WNYC.org. WNYC.org. It's by Robert Lewis and Noah Veltman. And it's about how handheld video cameras in everybody's pocket are proven just what perjurous liars and criminals the cops are. Oh, we swear it happened this way. And yet, nope, never does. Well, not necessarily never, but so often it's proven. Now, in this case, of course, they're focusing on New York City, but it's the same everywhere. And then this is the one I really would have you look at, man. This just drives me crazy. Boston Globe. Okay? Boston Globe. Autopsy notes in baby's death raise questions about DA's role. Medical examiner says he was bullied. You know, usually the medical examiners or the scientists, the in-house scientists working for the government, the scandal usually is they're all too willing to frame the evidence up to make the cops seem right about whatever the cops say happened. Well, in this case, this medical examiner, there were actually two cases. But the first case that they talk about here, the baby's brain was all messed up. It was a six-month-old baby. And the brain was all messed up. And the medical examiner ruled that, hey, this looks like shaken baby syndrome, abusive head trauma. And turn that over to the prosecutors who decide they're going to file charges against the father. The father and the mother both were like, no freaking way. That's not what happened. Whatever, whatever. Well, experts hired by his defense counsel found a rare genetic defect that made members of their family prone to ruptures of veins and arteries, providing an alternative explanation of the baby's death. So when the medical examiner found out about that, he said, oh, whoa, hey. I could have very well been wrong. Let me change this to could not be determined. Don't you hang no prosecution on what I said, because now I have new information that explains a whole other reason why the baby's brain could have been in the shape that it was in. And then the prosecutor tried to bully him and tried to make him stick with the claim so they could have their prosecution, so they could prosecute an innocent man for murdering his own baby when they knew it wasn't true, when they knew the only thing that they had to pin it on him was now outdated medical evidence. And then they tried to bully and intimidate the medical examiner into sticking with his earlier conclusion. Can you believe that? Oh, yeah, you better believe it. And then it says down here, you know what? There was another case just like this. In a second, strikingly similar case involving a baby's death, concerns about interference arose again. This is in the Boston Globe right now. This is your security force here to protect you and your baby. Your government. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, all, Skull Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Hey, chat room guys, you think maybe we should take some calls on the show today? I got a ton to talk about, of course, but wouldn't mind talking to you guys if you want to call in. I got to get everything set up first and all that, so it won't be this segment, but I guess I'll let the chat room folk decide. So if you want to join up the chat room to decide, do that. ScottHorton.org/chat. Take some calls if you want. So I'm putting off talking about Israel and Palestine today because it's got me so bent out of shape that I don't want to start talking about it yet because then I'm going to spend the whole rest of the show on it and then I just don't want to. There's so much other stuff going on. So let me instead tell you about Anthony Weller. This basically is just for the longtime listeners of this show. Or I don't know, maybe if you've just been listening as long as this summer, you may have heard my interview with Anthony Weller. I've actually interviewed him quite a few times now, four times or something like that. Usually right around August, about his father's book, First Into Nagasaki, which was censored and locked away and presumed lost in the attic until after his father died. And then Anthony, who is a writer himself, found his father's journalism in the attic and published it. First Into Nagasaki. MacArthur had censored it all. And it's really something else, that book. And Anthony, he's a really great guy. And I'll tell you a little story is, the last time I had him on just a couple of months ago, you know, in August, when I called him, I had Gage, you know, arranged the whole thing, had talked to him on the phone and whatever, I guess, given me the phone number. So when I called him, he answered the phone and he sounded like an 80-year-old man or something. And I said, oh, may I please speak to Anthony? Or maybe I asked, is this Anthony? I think he said, oh, this is Anthony or something. And I thought, what, do I have the wrong number and I called the wrong Anthony? And then, no, it was him. And then when it came time to take the commercial break, he was like dying for a break. The poor guy. And then I only found out after he has MS. And as he put it, the bad kind. Not the nice, friendly, you can get by kind of MS, which is a death sentence anyway, right? Or at least a torture sentence. He's got the really bad one that's killing him. Soon, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, so I talked to them a little bit about this. I guess maybe I mentioned this to you guys on the show one time before, but Gage sent me this, and I don't know if I already knew about it or I lost it. Or I don't think I ever seen it. But anyway, it's a page at youcaring.com. It's a medical fundraiser, linking hands for Anthony. And, you know, he's not just the editor of his father's books. The guy is a musician and an author of quite a few books of his own. He's got a family. And it looks like, man, they're actually doing okay. They're trying to raise $300,000. And it looks like they have gotten $182,000 pledged, which is a miracle. which is amazing. And I don't know what they get for that. You know what? But I don't know. There is something you can do, right? What sucks actually is maybe when they ask for $300,000, that can help get big donations maybe, but it also makes you think, well, geez, why would I give 5 or 10 or 20 when that's going to just a drop in the bucket? But you know what? You guys give 5 or 10 or 20, that really helps. That could really help. And so, you know, I don't know. He's a friend of the show. If you heard him, if you read the book, if you know about him, if you respect the man, maybe you want to help him out. It's youcaring.com. And I guess you just search for his name there, Anthony Weller. It's no URL that I can really read out to you. Well, it ain't that bad. It's medical-fundraiser. youcaring.com/medical-fundraiser/linkinghandsforanthony. And there's dashes in all those too. Linking hands for Anthony. I bet that, in fact, let me see if that'll work. If we do that without the number code and everything at the end here. Yeah, that'll work. Nope. Page not found. So it's youcaring.com/medical-fundraiser. This sucks. You know what? I'll just put the tweet out. You can look at my Twitter handle if you want. You don't have to be a member of Twitter to do it. Just go to twitter.com/ScottHortonShow. It's my last tweet. And I just put it out there, okay? There you go. Okay, and then here's another thing I want to say, which is sort of just a personal note, too, that freaking McClatchy Newspapers is closing down their foreign bureau. Landay's gone. Prothero's gone. Or I don't know if they're gone yet, but they're leaving very soon. Nancy Youssef had already bailed out to the Daily Beast, where now she's writing with the Hawks. And she's writing true things, I think, but running with bad folk, I don't know. I haven't found any flaws in her journalism. I'm not saying that. But Landay and Prothero, I don't know what's going to happen to them. Roy Gutman, I guess, will be gone too. And I know Roy, I've got problems with Roy too, but he does good journalism too sometimes, guys. You got to admit. And Hannah Alam is good. So, as you may be familiar, you may not, but McClatchy Newspapers had bought Knight Ridder. And Knight Ridder, and particularly Jonathan Landay and his buddy Warren Strobel, and then they had a columnist too named, I want to say George Weller, but that's not right, but it's George somebody. That's on the tip of my tongue. But they had an in-house columnist who was just as good as Landay and Strobel, basically. And those guys debunked the case for the Iraq war better than anybody, or as good as anybody. Not better. And earlier. And Landay was writing about how the neocons are pushing for attack in Iraq in September 2001. Everybody at CIA says they had nothing to do with the attack, but that the Bush guys want to go ahead and have a war against them too. And it's all the political appointees that Dick Cheney hired and put in charge in the Pentagon. I mean, it's all there, man. And in fact, right now, it's all at McClatchyDC.com. And if you just search Landay, Iraq, 2001, 2002, 2003, especially if you add the search term Strobel, too, because they wrote a lot of those articles together, you'll find a ton of really great stuff. And so, you know, their advantage is it's a big enough company that they can support real journalism, but they are outsider enough that they get it right a hell of a lot of the time. You know, they do really good stuff. Think about all the great reporting that David Enders did in the early days of the war in Syria there. You know, their guy Austin Tice is still a prisoner, presumably, of the Assad tyranny there right now. And anyway, sad to hear. I'm sure, you know, Landay and Prothero and the rest will land on their feet somewhere. I'll let you know where as soon as I know. But I sure hope McClatchy keeps their archives up, man. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
All right, kids, welcome back to the show here. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. All right, Ukrainian Nazis are going to talk about that. Palestine, I'm still putting off talking about Palestine and talking about Afghanistan. Wait, I was going to say something else there real quick, but now I don't remember what it was. Oh, it was about Lande. In the chat room, they said Lande got hired by Reuters. So, that's good to hear. Jonathan Lande. Oh, by the way, the tale I told there about Lande and Strobel getting Iraq right, better than any other mainstream media or mainstream newspaper reporters in the country, there's a documentary, and it's Bill Moyers, but still, it's all right, man. It's Buying the War. Buying the War by Bill Moyers and... he gives a whole segment over to Lande and Strobel and examples of them being right and whatever. Explains. And you know what? As long as I'm talking bad about Moyers, who drives me crazy a lot of time, I should give him credit for his documentary, The Secret Government, that he made in the 1980s, all about the Iran-Contra crew, the vice president's office. And... you know, the Reagan administration operating outside the law. Ain't no conspiracy theory. It's just good journalism. This is how the CIA murders people, like what they don't tell you about, by Bill Moyers. It's good, man. You go back and watch that. You'll learn some things about the Reagan years. You'll be glad you did. And I saw that when I was in 10th grade. I had a really great communist history teacher. Taught me lots of cool stuff. And that was one of them. Well, she's kind of an anarchist. I shouldn't call her communist like a bad thing. She's an anarchist. A left-wing one. But anyway, she showed us that, and it, you know, that's good, because, you know, Moyers, he used to be the, he's not a kook. He's a progressive, but a very mainstream guy. He was the press secretary for LBJ, and he doesn't have, like, a Ramsey Clark reputation or anything. He's just a, you know, he's all right. So, good credible source to say, like, yes, for 8 years, an entire segment of the executive branch operate as though there's no law at all. And they do whatever they want and kill whoever they want, including children. You know, for the money. And stuff like that. So, all right. That's a good thing to show a 10th grader, man. Don't you think? I do. Oh, Kits Mac in the chat room says, Moyers was the one who had the bubble top taken off the limo. Wouldn't that be something, man? Never know. I don't know. And then the question is, did he scream, "Doke!" Or did he say, "Yeah"? When it came down to it. All right, well, I don't know. Just chat room talk, man. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, the Scott Horton Show. Yeah, let's talk about the Ukrainian Nazis here for a minute. No, let's talk about Afghanistan first. Major Taliban sweep continues as forces near key Afghan city of Ghazni. Residents fleeing toward the capital amid growing offensive. The Taliban's advantage in their latest offensive against the Afghan military seems to be growing, with the strategically important city of Ghazni in their sights and clashes reported along the outskirts as Taliban forces approach from multiple directions. just 2 weeks after the Taliban captured the important northern city of Kunduz. The fall of Ghazni in the southeast could be a sign of a growing trend, as reports grow of the Taliban having more territory under their control than at any other time during the 14-year U.S. occupation. Ghazni is a smaller city than Kunduz, but arguably more important, located on the nation's main highway, connecting the capital of Kabul to the rest of the nation. The loss of the city would dramatically strengthen Taliban's sway over the south. Ghazni's deputy governor is claiming to have the upper hand in the latest fighting, but with similar confidence preceding the fall of Kunduz, locals don't seem to be taking any chances, and many are fleeing toward Kabul or toward other districts they believe are safer. Yeah, well, that's the thing about those armies. You can build them up and spend a zillion dollars on them, but if they're not actually fighting for their own interests, but just for a paycheck, they're going to turn right around and walk away, just like happened in Mosul, just like started to happen in Mosul before it was sacked in 2014. It started in the spring of 2013 when the Shia army soldiers stationed up in Mosul said, screw this, man, I'm going back to Baghdad to the Shia side of the line. I don't want to be way out here at Fort Nowhere with no backup and supply lines. Forget this. It's enemy territory. There's no such thing as Iraq, not anymore. And so then when the Islamic State came, whatever was left of the so-called Iraqi army, the Shiite army, turned and fled. It's not their town to fight for. Nothing to believe in there. It's not the same as fighting for Najaf, Karbala, you know. Well, same thing here. If you pay these guys, they'll march around. But are they going to die to fight for the government, the sock puppet government in Kabul? Nah. Not very many of them anyway. They're not going to fight that hard. And just look at the numbers, man. In Kunduz, well, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I think it may be Paul Pilar's article today. Is it Paul Pilar's article today? It is. No, it's not. Which article was it where they talked about? It was almost Mosul-like numbers where thousands of Afghan soldiers fled from Kunduz in the face of hundreds of Taliban fighters. So they're not fighting for their people. They're just fighting to collect an American welfare check. I've said it before, but it's such a great analogy. If you're familiar with the Austrian explanation of the business cycle, that it's all caused by bank credit expansion, inflation of the money supply. By the banks, backed by the government. And that causes artificial booms in some industries and some parts of the economy. But then later the corrections come. Because people are only going to make bad bets on top of each other for so long before they start realizing that the game is up. Try to get out before everybody else bubble pops. Oops. So, it's the same thing with the wars. Backed by inflationary Federal Reserve money, by the way. But the deal with the wars is, it's, you know, artificial inflation of the firepower supply. The American Army and Marine Corps choosing factions, their leaders, choosing which factions they're backing, make those factions much more powerful, makes their authority worth that much more. But then, when the inflation stops and the deflation begins, the money, the soldier supply starts being contracted, you have to have a massive correction. And really, I think, you know, I'm not really an economist. I just understand what they're talking about, more or less. And I think that, if I'm paraphrasing him correctly, Peter Schiff, back in his historic Mortgage Bankers Association speech of 2006, which if you haven't seen it, you're cheating yourself. You got to. It's great. And in there, he says, hey, as high up as your artificial bubble is from the, you know, the real price line, that's how far down you're going to fall too when the correction comes. You're not going to fall down to where prices belong. You're going to fall as low as you were artificially high in a very real way. And that's the one where the banker in the audience says, well, I own all these houses in Phoenix. Are you telling me I should slip my wrists? And he says, I'm telling you, you should sell them right now to another sucker who's dumber than you. You got to see that thing if you haven't. Peter Schiff, 2006, Mortgage Bankers. Put that in your YouTube.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
Hey, all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at mastersamuraitech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from mastersamuraitech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at mastersamuraitech.com. All right, I got distracted by my Phoenix guy slitting his wrist tangent thing, and I forgot to get back to the coming horrible collapse of the bubble, the artificially Federal Reserve and Pentagon-backed bubble of power in the hands of the government in Kabul right now. Just how bad is it going to be? I don't know. I guess the Americans are going to reinvade, right? After, you know, everybody believes the Republican hype that the reason for the rise of the Islamic State is because Obama pulled out of Iraq. We already saw how he refused to end the Afghan war in the first place. He prolonged it. He doubled it. He tripled it, actually. There are more people killed in the first couple of years, more Americans and Afghans killed in the first couple of years of Obama's administration than during the entire Afghan war of George W. Bush. And just by the end of 2010. Because, oh, I can't end two wars because then they'll call me a wimpy Democrat. So I got to bow down, be a strong leader and bow down and expand the war. Well, now he's restarted the Iraq war again. And is refusing to end. He promised, remember, the end of 2014. Was supposed to be the final end of the Afghan war. Well, we still got 10,000 troops there and air power and drones, and they're killing, burning children to death in their hospital beds and fighting against the Taliban and whoever else opposes them, who all somehow magically get the name Taliban, whether they're actually Taliban or not. And it's going to be a disaster, but anyway, that's what I told you in 2001. I mean, assuming you were a friend of mine or rode in my cab. That's why I told you starting on the radio, at least in 2002. There was a couple years there between Free Radio Austin and Radio Chaos. But anyway, the Americans, they can't win Afghanistan any more than the Afghans could ever take Colorado from the people of this country. Well, geez, we're already at the top of the mountain with rifles shooting down at you. So what are you going to do about that? Nothing is what you're going to do about that. Lose. Eventually go home. Which was, of course, the whole point of this operation. To bleed America to bankruptcy, fighting a war they couldn't possibly win. Up mountains they can't possibly climb while people are shooting at them. From above. You get that? I guess we could drop H-bombs on them, but anyway. All right, now I want to say thanks again to the Texas Millennial Institute for having me out on Saturday, Jacob Hornberger and Angela Keaton and Ted Carpenter from Cato. Also gave a talk. Oh, and Gada Mukdad, who is a Syrian. Somehow a survivor of America's war in her country there. So it was a real cool thing. There's no video or audio, I don't think. But anyway, if you were there, it was a great time. And I want to say thanks again to everybody who came up and shook my hand and said nice things, and especially, you know, travel there just to see me. A couple of people said that kind of thing. So I don't know if I ever sound grateful or appreciative enough or whatever, but I'm trying to. That's the point. Because, you know, I am. Did I tell you one guy said? I don't think I told you guys this. One guy said to me, he said, I heard Justin Pavone. I heard your interview of Justin Pavone, and that day I turned in my conscientious objector paperwork to get out of the Army. Isn't that cool? Now, Justin Pavone, you remember him. He and his wife, Jessica, both found Ron Paul, became libertarian anarchist. I think anarchist. Certainly extremely libertarian. And both of them. Or one kind of conscientious objector or another. I don't know, officially or not, but. And they're out now. They've both written a couple of pieces for antiwar.com, and I've interviewed them on the show. And I got to meet them at the Ron Paul barbecue, which was really cool. And they're the ones, I tell you this anecdote, or maybe Sheldon told it on the air. I can't remember which conversations are on the air or not with Sheldon, but Sheldon told the story of he went to his local anti-war meeting group thing, and they went around the circle and talked about themselves a little bit, and he started talking about, you know, what he's doing there or whatever, and they said, wow, wait a minute, are you Sheldon Richmond? Wow-wee. And so, cool, man. They're libertarians, Sheldon Richmond fans, living there in Arkansas. So, anyway, that was really cool, man, to hear that Justin Pavone, it wasn't me, it was my interview of Pavone. And Pavone's saying, that's it, man. I'm not doing this. It's the wrong thing to do. Why would I keep doing it? Done. And so great story and great example set there. I like stories like that, man. I know I can't really change the course of history. I'm trying to help change people a little bit, you know, if I can, individual ones. And sometimes they say, thanks. I used to suck on this stuff, but now I'm a lot better for not being a warmonger. Seems like that'd be really trying on you to be wishing death upon a bunch of strangers all the time. Wait, is that really who I am? I agree with Bill Hicks on this. There ain't nothing original. I'll give him the credit, bro. I totally agree. Everybody should eat some acid at one point. Or at least smoke some really good weed. And ask yourself if you really believe the things you think you believe for a minute and see whether you still do or not. Change your frame of reference just a little bit and go, wait, is that right? Yeah, I think so. No, definitely not. You know? Might be worth it. Might be worth a try. Anyway. I should have that queued up or something. Well, I took mushrooms and went to Astro World and I had a real bad time. Yeah, well, you're doing it wrong, dude. You're not supposed to do that. All right. Well, there's a Syria thing. Now let's just talk about politics. A few minutes left. In the next hour, we're going to talk all about, we got a ton of important news. Not just me waxing on and on about it, but I got a ton of news to cover in terms of Israel, Palestine, and Syria as well. But let me talk about politics for a minute. Did you see this? Did you hear about this? Hillary Clinton's negatives are now, they already were at like 48%, and they're now, I think, at 60-something or 70-something. I forgot what I was told. But it was some kind of super majority negative perception of her. Which, you know, not like I told you so forever ago. She's not electable. I don't know how the Democrats convinced themselves that she's electable. You know, I mean, whatever, everything she represents is, the establishment gets their way all the time and all that. I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying, her? Not Bill Clinton, but the wife? Really? Because I don't think we like her. Because she's not really likable enough. And never mind the piles of skulls. But I'm just talking about what American voters care about. Certainly not piles of skulls. What they care about is, I don't really like her. Yeah, you know why? Because she's horrible and evil. And everything she says is horrible and evil and oftentimes really stupid. And so, anyway. I just thought that was funny that they're still sticking with her. And another thing I think is funny about that is look at the complete and total lack of talent on the Democrat side. They got nobody. All the governors and all the senators in America, and they got nobody to run. I mean, you know, huge factions of them are dying to get Biden in there. Biden, who, you know, you could call it the Biden doctrine of drug war and mass incarceration in this country. Oh, and by the way, here's 20 different clips, you know, pictures of him feeling up other politicians' wives and daughters. Yeah, that'll get him the Democratic nomination in the most politically correct era on the left ever. And seriously, it's daughters, too. It's not just the wives. It's, which, you know, at least we know they're not virgins or whatever. But, like, some of these girls, like a 16-year-old girl going, oh, my God. Like, she's the vice president of the United States, you know? Jesus. Anyway, they got nobody. Hillary is the best they got. They're the scum of the earth. They're the worst people in the whole world. And also the Republicans. I mean, both sides are worse than each other, okay? I'm not ever saying one side's better than the other. Both sides are worse than each other, and it's a matter of quantity, not quality, so it doesn't matter if the numbers add up, really, guys. You understand? And then, let me just say real quick about Trump. He mocked Marco Rubio for being bought and paid for and owned by Sheldon Adelson, the huge right-wing Israel lobby sock puppeteer on the right. Amazing to me that Trump would say that. Huge fight in store over that. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment, MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to MPVEngineering.com. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show, here on the Liberty Radio Network. live noon to 2 Eastern, 11 to 1 Texas time. LibertyRadioNetwork.com. ScottHorton.org. Join up the chat room. That's interesting. So coming up, I'm going to be talking about Israel-Palestine stuff. I got a lot of stuff to tell you about that. You're not going to like it. And then Islamic State, Syria war, Russia, this, that, and the other thing. Got to talk about that, too. So we can do calls. And you don't have to talk about Syria or Palestine. It can be about whatever you want. What the hell? Probably sick of hearing me talk about whatever the subject is, right? So call in, I'll interview you about what you think about whatever the hell it is that you want to talk about. So the number to call in, 512-271-4836. 512-271-4836. So, man, I have what amounts to a call in the chat room here. A libertarian dilemma. M. Strong says he's got an opportunity to, I think he says, move out to the sticks and be the manager of a project. And it would be a big, new, badass thing. A golden ticket, he calls it. An incredible opportunity. But to begin it, his business partner wants him to have to go on Obamacare and food stamps and whatever other welfare that he can in order to cut down on his share of the salary, at least to start. Or something. He didn't make that exactly clear, but... So, yeah, and could be a deal killer if he refuses to do it. Man. I don't know, man. You know, my thing is that I won't accept any of that stuff. And believe me, I qualify. And my wife has, you know, got health problems and whatever. I could get all kinds of crap if that was the way I wanted to go. But then again, I don't have, you know, a change of career or a change within a career that a huge opportunity, you know, stare me in the face that this is the one condition. I guess it would depend how long we're talking about. It's a pretty severe violation of my principles to do it, but if I absolutely had to, somehow, you know, if I came down with a hole in my spine or some horrible thing and whatever, I guess, what am I going to do? People going to keep advertising on the show I can't do no more? I don't know. So, I don't know. I mean, the real solution is make more money and then it's not an issue. Get that going as fast as you can. But yeah, I mean, yeah, see, this Kit asks in the chat room, how much of a golden ticket is this if you have to go on welfare to cut costs in the first place? See, that's why I'm presuming it's a thing about, you know, it's a very, you know, means to an end kind of thing for a shorter period of time so that the longer deal can work out. I guess it depends on how sure of a thing it is and just how golden a ticket. But I would not say that, oh, you're going to libertarian hell if you would dare. Because you know what? Let's be honest about this, the Obamacare thing. You know, I'm paying right now more than $600 a month for coverage with a deductible that's $12,000 or something. Might as well be completely worthless. You know, and you know what? They set it up to where you can make as much as $60,000 a year and qualify for Obamacare. And the reason why is because they know that even if you make $60,000 a year, having to pay $1,000 a month or something for, you know, assuming you have a family of four or whatever it is, in order to pick up the cost of everybody else's Obamacare, it's going to kill you. So you're going to have to get on Obamacare too. I mean, that's basically the thing of it. It's not just that they're offering this service to some. They're basically forcing everyone who never wanted it, who never needed it, to now have to need it. My premium went up and my deductible went way up. I'm paying $600. You guys have no idea how little money I make doing this show. I'm paying $625 a month. And it's breaking my back. And I'm considering signing up for goddamn Obamacare myself, because what am I supposed to do? I don't want to, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know, man. I wouldn't hold it against anybody else for having no choice but to do it, because that's the way they rigged the game. It's called fascism. You know what's funny, too, is if you just abolished all regulation of healthcare and just had free enterprise in healthcare services in America, every one of these problems would be solved in a week and a half. You got to be kidding me. Every one of these prices just needs their chance to adjust and then let markets get to work on bringing them down. Just like with everything. Hey, I know. Why don't we put government in charge of all food resources? That way to make sure everybody gets food. Right, that's stupid, because then what? We would all starve to death, right? Because you got to have zillions of different people all working on their own to get whoever fed for their gain, to get everybody fed. There's no reason in the world to think that you need government welfare to pay for healthcare, except for the fact that government drove up the price so high you needed insurance, and then they drove up the prices so high that you can't even afford the insurance, and so now you got to get them to buy your insurance for you. Yeah, just like Bismarck designed it in the first place. So that your family is directly dependent on the state. Hey, who needs freedom, right? Except here's the funny thing. My wife, previously mentioned with the health problems, she's from the Soviet Union, where everything was free, and you get nothing. And healthcare was absolutely miserable. And you have a free apartment, but you have to share it with four other families. And you get free food, but you have to stand in line for a day and a half, and maybe you'll get a loaf of bread. Okay? That's what it means to have everything rationed. To have everything owned by the state, taking good care of you, for you. No freedom, and no free stuff either. A lot of free nothing. And an early grave. So. Alright, so let's see. Someone else asked me a question here. So Sarah says, personally, I like to take as much money from the government as possible so they have less to spend on war. That's okay with me too, dude. Or at least, you know, Walter Block has a whole libertarian argument for that. That libertarians especially ought to sign up for every government program in the world because we're the best people of all. We're the ones who ought to have it more than anyone. At least we're not going to spend it advocating more plunder even when we're taking it. So, you know, I don't know, man. Maybe you should listen to her, dude. But the truth is, every billionaire in this country is on welfare. So if you think that you can take advantage of the state in a way that benefits you, then the hell do I care, man? I ain't against you if you do. Yeah, this one guy says, man, to be completely consistent against the state, you have to live like the Unabomber in the cabin in the woods. Which you can't. You got to drive on government roads. You got to have a government ID mostly to take care of things, you know? But, you know, personally, though, I'll go back to my thing. I hate it. I try to never be the demand for their supply. And not just because I don't want to be a hypocrite, because really I hate them. I don't want their damned help. At all. And so, even if it's, you know, damn near half of what I make, I'll pay the damn insurance anyway. I just won't eat as much. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now. Selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co. All right, guys. This is the part of the show where I got to talk about Israel. Hey, listen, don't let your kids listen to this part of the show if you're driving down the road and the kid's in the seat. So I'm going to be rude. It's the thing I'm going to be talking about. I might be rude. The thing that I'm talking about is just, you know. You gotta at least have two digits in your age. Well, I mean, whatever. You're the parents. It's up to you. But I'm just saying, you know, it's pretty ugly. Okay? So. You can find it at antiwar.com/blog. Israeli sadists mock dying boy. That's what I titled it. And it's only sort of accurate. He's actually alive in critical condition right now. But they were hoping that he would die. And they were screaming at him to die. And you can watch the video. The Israeli settlers, colonists, themselves, filming themselves, chanting and mocking a 14-year-old boy who one of them shot. And his legs were all bent back behind him. He's too weak to even be able to pull his feet out. So he looks like, you know, some, like on the Family Guy whenever somebody dies and their arms and their legs are all twisted in weird positions and stuff. So in other words, he's in not only shot, but his body is contorted in severe discomfort. He's laying there bleeding and gasping for breath. Certainly assuming that he's dying. And they're screaming at him, "Die, you son of a whore! You faggot!" Over and over and over again. At this 14-year-old boy. As dozens of cops and colonists and whoever all stand around, no one providing any medical assistance at all. Again, to a 14-year-old boy, and he looks more like he's 12 to me. But then again, I look like I was 12 when I was 14, too, so. He's laying there dying, and they're laughing at him, and mocking him, and cursing him. Can you imagine? Think if that was some 14-year-old in your life. Remember who you were when you were 14? Who your friends were when you were 14? You got a son or a daughter around that age, a cousin? And think about that. Go watch this video. It's at antiwar.com/blog right now. And they say, "Oh yeah, no, he had a knife." Well, I presume that you're a liar, and I presume that he's innocent, just like his cousin who's dead. They killed his cousin. That's not on video. Shot both of them. They're both 14 years old. And it's possible that they did have a knife. It's possible that they attempted to attack an Israeli colonist occupying their land quite immorally and illegally. But nobody ever showed that. Nobody ever proved that. It's just an accusation by Israeli government officials, so they accuse, he's presumed innocent by American standards. And even if he did attempt to attack someone with a knife, and even if he was actually shot in the act of that rather than, you know, sometime later, then he's still a 14-year-old boy. You still are bound to provide him medical assistance. They're sitting there hoping that he bleeds out, laughing him and mocking him and ridiculing him as he lays there dying alone on the concrete. And apparently they left him there for quite a while, half an hour or something like that, I think Charlotte Silver said at Electronic Intifada, before the EMTs finally took him away. It's just unbelievable. It is. I mean, you know, I mean, imagine the American equivalent of this would be, you know, the rich white side of St. Louis. I don't know. Zimmerman kills Trayvon. And then he and the whole neighborhood and all the cops all film it and stand around laughing and mocking him the whole time as he's dying. Get it? Like, not even here. Not even in America is it like that anymore, you know? I don't know, James Byrd, but that was still 20 years ago, right? And still, no, that was still just three guys murdered him. It was not the town gathered around to participate in it. Yeah, it's just something else, man. And you can read, I link in the blog post, I link to Charlotte Silver. And her article is called "We Are the Masters," which is a quote of a mayor, an Israeli mayor, as three more Palestinians are killed. "We are the masters," which means, of course, get it? Get it? The Palestinians are slaves. Well, they're not really slaves because the Israelis don't want them around at all. But they have no rights whatsoever. Because the Israelis are their masters. who conquered them in a war that the people of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip didn't start 48 years ago. And, you know, this is one at Mondo Weiss. Didn't I just say to you yesterday, I say all the time, Americans just don't understand this. They don't know. Well, here at Mondo Weiss, the article today is, and it's by Phil Weiss. NPR, that's National Public Radio, fails to mention the occupation. And he goes, he talks about a piece they did at all the latest violence in Israel, and they refer to East Jerusalem, just outside Jerusalem's old city. Hi, I'm David Green, and yes, there's a place just outside Jerusalem's old city where somebody got stabbed. And if you already know what's the political situation and who rules who in East Jerusalem, then good for you. But if you don't, F you, because we're never going to tell you who's occupying who. Who is ethnically cleansing who? Who is murdering who? Who is bulldozing whose neighborhood? Whose cemetery? Who is the victim? And who is the perpetrator here? Oh, they'll never tell you, never. Oh, guess what, everybody? There's violence. Yes, you know how it is. For thousands and thousands of years, they've been fighting over which version of the same God is the right one. Liars. You're liars. They're fighting over the fact that the Palestinians are conquered, brutalized, occupied, subject peoples whose children's lives are forfeit at the whim of not just Israeli government employees, but all of their civilian colonists as well. Continuing to devour their property and their lives. Oh, but on NPR, if you listen to them, you might think Palestine is the country next door, where these terrorists just will never stop their ceaseless aggression against the poor little victim Israelis. However will they survive being occupied by the terrible Palestinians, who won't just let them live wherever they want. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. All right, you guys. So, it's my show, Scott Horton Show. Yeah. Let's do Ukraine now. I don't want to talk about Israel anymore. Go read Mondo Weiss if you want to learn things. Okay. U.S. touts ISIS killing of Iran general as a psychological blow to Syria. Officials present ISIS assassination as key to regime change. Holy crap. Man, guys, I'm starting to think that the pretense is over now. Jason Ditz, news.antiwar.com. While the U.S. is still nominally fighting a war against ISIS, officials seem to have shifted their narrative more or less entirely to opposing the Syrian government since Russia joined the war on their side. And U.S. officials seem a little too happy about the Islamic State killing an Iranian general on Friday. Isn't this something? By the way, for people listening to this back, you know, in future history, a long time from now, or whatever, we're a year and a half into the declaration of the caliphate now. Not just an Islamic state under Sharia law, but the caliphate. quote unquote. And check the archives for a year and a half on this show. We've been saying, geez, they're going to kind of have to turn their policy around now, right? I mean, now that basically Bin Laden himself reincarnated is the self-declared dictator of this whole region now between what used to be Iraq and Syria. And I was always skeptical, but I had some of the best guests on this show saying, oh, yeah, well, they're going to have to turn around and back Assad now. And I was saying, I don't know, man. It's sure taking them a long time. And now just, no, forget it. It's the Ba'athist government that must be destroyed in favor of Al-Qaeda, in favor of Saudi plans for Syria. The Islamic State kills an Iranian general, and instead of the Americans saying, look, I know it's kind of awkward that the Iranians are fighting against ISIS just like us, but still, ISIS has got to be fought. That's not even their spin at all. Their spin is, ha-ha, this is going to really hurt the Syrian government now that they lost their Iranian general to ISIS, to the Bin Ladenites, the Islamic State, the Caliphate. U.S. officials are presenting the death of, this is Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com. News.antiwar.com. U.S. officials are presenting the death of General Hossein Hamadani as a psychological blow, quote unquote, to the Syrian government and its supporters, suggesting that it is a major setback in the ongoing war and a major step toward regime change, a U.S. policy goal. Incredible. Hamdani was killed during ISIS's recent offensive in Aleppo, where he was advising Syrian forces. The Islamic State has gained territory along the outskirts of Aleppo city itself in recent days, though a Russian airstrike destroyed a major ISIS weapons depot in the province. Man, ain't it something? Read 'em and weep, America. It's the highest of high treason. And you know what? Legally speaking, well, you know, I don't know, man, how to say it. What George Bush did for Al-Qaeda was at least as bad as what Obama has done for them. But Bush did it accidentally. You know, for all of the nefarious motivation behind the regime change plans in Iraq, I am fairly certain that none of them were, we want all of Iraqi Sunnistan to turn into Bin Laden land. But Obama has directly taken their side. I mean, even when Petraeus was bribing him, he was bribing him to stop fighting our guys. You know, and he wasn't bribing them to attack the Shiite government that we were supporting. He was bribing them to just, please, let's have a ceasefire for a while. But Obama has outright backed them, outright chosen the side of the Libyan and Syrian veterans of Al-Qaeda in Iraq. It's the highest treason of any government official I can think of. I mean, I guess Henry Kissinger, nah, because see, even Henry Kissinger scotching the peace talks in 1968, ruining those peace talks, it condemned the region to war, to further war. I mean, in a sense, it was providing aid and comfort to the North, but not really. They were going to end up taking over the whole country anyway, kind of, I don't know. It was some kind of treason. But, of course, the North Vietnamese had never killed 3,000 American civilians on American soil. Children on airplanes going to visit relatives, torn to little pieces when their planes are crashed into towers full of more civilians. I mean, this is, and you know what, I'm a Lysander Spooner guy. But Obama actually did take a sacred oath. He actually does owe allegiance, and the same thing for his entire national security cabinet. And the fact that they're not willing to stand up to the Israelis and just tell the American people that, look, we understand the Israelis hate Assad, and we love Israelis. We love Israel. However, Assad's enemies are sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City, so our priority is not necessarily to back him, but certainly to not help overthrow him. And nor will we countenance our allies trying to overthrow him when he's keeping Al-Qaeda down. That would have been easy. And he could have said, listen, for me to choose John McCain's argument here would be treason. Let's get it straight. The Northern Storm Brigade, long before John, Mr. McCain went over there and posed with them for pictures on the porch, they had already told Time Magazine on camera, on the internet, yeah, we're veterans of the Iraq War. They were Al-Qaeda in Iraq before they ever named it the Nusra Front. These guys were on the record saying, yeah, we're veterans of the Iraq War. We're the Sunni-based insurgency from the Iraq War, to put it politely. And now we're taking the fight to Assad. All Obama had to do was say, listen, I frankly just disagree with John McCain that we should side with Ayman al-Zawahiri now. And he can cry all day about moderates, but the truth is the moderates are extremists too. And everybody knows it. Just type in FSA beheading and you're done. You're done. Just, you know, even the experts who support this stuff, like Charles Lister at the Qatar-owned Brookings Institution, says, yeah, the Army of Conquest, that's Al-Qaeda, and a few of America's CIA sock puppets. And the whole operation is run by the Saudis and the Americans working together in a room, as he called it, in Turkey. Charles Lister wrote that at the Huffington Post. He's as official, pro-regime change, full of BS about how the moderation of the moderates all day long. Promoter, years-long promoter of the efficacy and wisdom of the CIA programs here, arming up and training these guys. And he admits that America's moderates pal around with Al-Qaeda when they're not doing suicide bombings and cutting people's heads off on their own time. What can you say, man? I don't know what to say about it anymore. It's almost unbelievable. The only reason, I mean, just think about it for a minute like this. Imagine if the conservatives in America, if the Republican Party had a partisan interest in using this against Obama, instead of a partisan interest at being mad at him for not being treasonous enough yet. What fun might that be, huh? Too bad Rand Paul is the best we got.
I love Bitcoin, but there's just something incredibly satisfying about having real, fine silver in your pocket. That's why commodity discs are so neat. They're 1 ounce rounds of fine silver with a QR code on the back. Just grab your smartphone's QR reader, scan the coin, and you'll instantly get the silver spot price in Federal Reserve notes and Bitcoin. And if you donate $100 to the Scott Horton Show, he'll send you one. Learn more at facebook.com/commodity discs. Commoditydiscs.com.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime future freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. All right, you guys. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Wrapping up for the day here. Appreciate y'all tuning in. Sign up for the podcast feeds at my site. I got whole show archives and interviews only archives for Stitcher and iTunes and all that stuff, man. Join up the chat room. Got a great chat room today, man. Thanks all you guys for hanging out. So Ukraine. Foreignpolicy.com. Now, I couldn't run this on antiwar.com because it has flaws in it and things, but it's still an important article I'd like you to read. Winter is coming, and so is Ukraine's far right. So the point of the article is that the coup d'etat junta, the American-backed, fascist-backed regime, could lose its fascist backing. And the fascists who back it, the outright Nazis who back it, might just overthrow the Republicans that they put in there, basically. to try to sum it up. The coup d'etat regime is a piece of crap. They blew their entire wad on fighting a war they could not win against the East. Got nowhere, ended at stalemate, and their recognition of Eastern autonomy anyway. Not that they're sorry about all the thousands of dead people or anything. And, hey man, they can't get services to their people. And it's already getting cold. And the Nazis, that is Svoboda, formerly known as the Social Nationalist Party. Oh, get it? See? They're not Nazis. They're not National Socialists. They're just Social Nationalists. So don't worry. Yeah, they love Hitler and all that, but still, you know, whatever. Anyway, and then their friends are from the right sector. Also a bunch of Hitler-loving Nazis. And then you got the Azov Battalion. And I think the latter two of those groups are really, you know, armed militias. Whereas, yeah, I don't know. I guess Svobodas, they've got their armed thugs too. But I guess maybe I'm under the impression they have a bit more to do with politics. But one of the things he says is, remember there was the talking point? Oh yeah, well if it was a fascist coup, then how come when they had their election, the Nazi parties didn't do very well? Because they had an agreement that all the Nazi parties would support this guy, Leshako, or whatever the hell his name was. And he did really well. That was where all the Nazi votes did. But now, he's breaking from the parliament. And choosing the Nazis. And they've threatened a coup a few times now. They've had major protests and rallies and this kind of thing. And Dmitry Yurash, who's the head of the right sector Nazis, who is a member of parliament, has said that, hey, I overthrew the government last time. Oh, not that it was a coup or anything. Hey, we overthrew the government last time. We can do it again. If that's what we want to do. That was, I think, a big part of the reason that they brought in the Americans to train up the National Guard was to try to integrate them into the army. Because, man, these Nazi groups are too independent. What are we going to do with them? Try to integrate them into the army. Didn't really work, did it? Just trained up and armed up a bunch of Hitler-loving Nazis. And then somebody asked me, I think by email, about Obama said on 60 Minutes, and I didn't watch it. I guess I should have. Or something. I don't want to. Anyway, Obama's interviewed on 60 Minutes. He says, oh, yeah, well, the situation in Ukraine all begins with a corrupt Russian sock puppet, something he called him, in Kiev, making it sound like it was a Russian-installed dictator there. But that's not the history of what happened here at all. And Yanukovych was absolutely corrupt, and yeah, he was friendly with the Russians, but he wasn't their sock puppet, and they weren't the ones who put him in there. He won an election in 2010. That was confirmed and affirmed by Jimmy Carter and the Europeans and all the usual suspects when it comes to free and fair elections. And why? Because the American coup d'etat regime change, Orange Revolution of 2004, completely fell apart. And the guy that they launched the 04 regime change to get rid of, ended up being elected fair and square by a long shot again in 2010. Well, the Americans didn't want that, so they changed the terms of the EU trade deal at the last minute to say, this deal is null and void if you make a similar deal with the Russians. And you're going to have to accept all this IMF restructuring of your economy, which means starve your people and give us all their property. And the Russians said, not only are we perfectly happy for you to have a deal with the Europeans too, but we'll give you $15 billion in discounts on gas and whatever else. And so Yanukovych, he said at the time, before the revolution ever started, not Monday morning quarterback hindsight 2020 thing, he said at the time in November of 2013, well, geez, I feel like I just showed up at a wedding and got notified about the prenuptial agreement at the last minute. And so now I'm kind of, you know, feeling not so in love anymore or something like that. Pretty good metaphor. And so he refused to sign the deal and signed the one with the Russians instead, which you don't have to be very cynical to at least suspect that that was the reason they changed the terms the way they did in the first place, right then and there, was to provoke a reaction against him and co-opt it and replay the Orange Revolution of 04. And so they spent the latter part of 2013 and the early part of 2014 fomenting a coup. The Americans were in on it. Victoria Nuland admitted on camera that they had put billions of dollars into supporting so-called civil society, all of which took their side, of course, in the revolution, so-called, not even, protest movement. And then, on the night of the 21st of February, 2014, they signed a deal, the Europeans signed a deal with Yanukovych saying, if he will pull his police back, they'll pull, they'll back off, and they'll agree to new elections in December, early elections. And so the Yanukovych government pulled back the police, and the Nazis just seized all the government buildings and ran them all out of town. And the whole thing, their cover was entirely blown before it ever happened. In fact, the day before the coup, Ron Paul was interviewed on Fox News saying, look, man, they're working on a coup d'etat in Ukraine right now. And they're like, oh, why are you so pro-Russia, Ron Paul, and all this crap? And he's like, dude, the Americans are working on a coup d'etat. Just watch. It happened the next day. You can check that out. And how did he know? Because the Russians had intercepted and leaked America's ambassador to the European Union, basically the Assistant Secretary of State for European Affairs, Robert Kagan's wife, Victoria Nuland, on the phone plotting the coup.
The Klitschko piece is obviously the complicated electron here, especially the announcement of him as Deputy Prime Minister. And you've seen some of my notes on the troubles in the marriage right now, so we're trying to get a read really fast on where he is on this stuff. But I think your argument to him, which you'll need to make, I think that's the next phone call we want to set up, is exactly the one you made to Yats. And I'm glad you sort of put him on the spot on where he fits in this scenario. And I'm very glad he said what he said in response.
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Tawny Book on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week, you know. I just think Cleach going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Okay, good. Well, do you want us to try to set up a call with him as the next step?
All right, well, so there they are plotting their coup. So Sarah in the chat room says, Obama said when he came into office, the president of Ukraine was a Russian puppet, but Yanukovych didn't come into office until 2010. So I'm not sure what that means. If that means that Obama just has no idea what he's talking about, he can't even get his BS straight, or maybe I'm missing. It could be that I screwed up and I'm missing a president between the remnants of the Orange Revolution and Yanukovych, which I guess is possible. Is there a more pro-Russian guy before Yanukovych? I think that Obama's more confused than me. But I don't know. I guess I'd have to look it up when I'm not live on the air and with 30 seconds to spare. Oh, I wanted to point out, too, about Syria, guys. I keep forgetting. This article by Liz Sly in the Washington Post. She's got her problems, but she's all right. I don't know, man. But anyway, did U.S. weapons supply to Syrian rebels draw Russia into the conflict? And it's all about the TOW missiles that America and Saudi have flooded the battlefield with, putting such pressure on Assad that that's what finally provoked the Russians into invading. Really does look like a repeat of Afghanistan 79 in a lot of ways, doesn't it? All right, well, thanks for hanging out. See you guys tomorrow. Appreciate it. ScottHorton.org for the stuff.